Welcome to another podcast episode of DIY Guitar Making. I also produce video episodes of DIY Guitar Making live in the workshop. To find both the podcasts and the videos all in one place, go to DIYGuitarMaking.com. You can even subscribe to the email list there to receive new episodes, both the videos and the podcasts, directly in your inbox as they come out. Again, that's DIYGuitarMaking.com. Welcome, folks. Welcome back. Enough nonsense with the guitar. I am very excited to do what we're going to do today, which is Q&A, because I'm always excited about hanging out with you guys and talking chop and talking guitars and all related things. Before we get started, if you like what I do and you get a little something out of the Q&As and the lessons that I teach here, do me a favor and go to ericschaferguitars.com. There you can see my structured online courses, and also you can check out the schedule of dates for my next upcoming acoustic guitar build workshop. Okay, things that are going on in the shop this week. I'm working on guitar number 116. I do want to let you guys know that August 17th and 18th, I will be at the Mount Gretna Outdoor Art Show. So that's not a guitar show, but just like it sounds, it is basically like a, it's not really a craft show. It is more like a fine art kind of show than a craft show. I'm the only guitar maker there. It's kind of cool. So that's going to be a lot of fun. It's sort of in my neck of the woods. I think it's an hour's drive away from me, but it's here in Pennsylvania, Mount Gretna, Pennsylvania. If you can check it out, come check it out. Otherwise, you know, I'll see you at a guitar show somewhere near you. That'll be fun too, because I plan on doing a lot more shows like this. Anyway, let's get right into the Q&A. No reason to dilly-dally here. So let's do the question of the week first. So the question of the week that I posted last week was, as a player, what is your favorite guitar brand? For clarification, when I say brand, I am excluding solo luthiers, which can perhaps be a future question, but smaller companies with just a dozen employees or so can be included. In essence, you walk into any decent music store, to which maker's guitars are you drawn? All right, and so Patrick writes, it's hard to beat Martin. Huss and Dalton and Collings make great guitars too. Huss and Dalton, I forgot about them actually. Collings do make great guitars, and I do like Martin as well. But let's see what other people said. Rob says, disclaimer, have only been playing a couple of years and have not played very many brands. That said, when walking into a music store, I look at the Martin first, then Taylor. I bought a Taylor 314 last year, and I love it. Someday, maybe a Martin D45. Yeah, within the, you know, split, the world of the, you know, the split between Martin and Taylor, just because of how I grew up, which is playing Taylors, actually, and not really playing Martins at all. I did have an X-Series Martin at one point, like a Mexico-made Martin with a Stratobon neck. But that, you know, in particular, isn't a great representation of what Martin is. So that was really growing up and playing guitar. That was my only experience with Martin, honestly. And I played a lot of Taylor guitars, actually. So, you know, the funny thing about a question like this is it really is one part is the guitars themselves, you know, the actual, the physical reality of those guitars, how they actually sound. But then another part is this emotional component, which is really just, what were you playing? I could have asked the question in a different way, which is what guitars were you playing in high school? Okay. And even though that's a completely different question than what are your favorite makers, mm-hmm. I figure I would get mostly the same answer because there, just like there is with music, there's this imprinting effect that happens in our childhood, especially around high school, where, you know, if you ask anyone, virtually anyone today, what, unless they're currently in high school, what their favorite music is, they will tell you bands that if you, you know, then ask them their age and did a little math, you would figure out like, oh, you were in high school when you were listening to Blue Oyster Cult or whatever, whatever your answer was. And I can say that because I tend to ask that question a lot in the courses that I teach here just for fun. Like I like to talk to people and I almost without exception, in fact, I can't even think of an exception. I almost without exception get the answer that, you know, my favorite bands are these bands, which are what I listened to in high school. So, and I'm not very different from that, although I do listen to a lot of new music that comes out today as well. I just always like to expand my musical horizons in that way. But, you know, the imprinting, the emotional effect is true for music and true for guitars. I played Taylor's a lot as a kid, so I can't help but be drawn a little bit more towards Taylor's nowadays. Getting back to your answers here. So that was Rob. LC Guitars writes, I honestly have no brand loyalty in the acoustic world. The only name brand acoustic I own is a Takamine Pro Series 12 string. I doubt I would ever buy another guitar. Yeah, he brings up an interesting point there too, which is that as makers of guitars, some of you guys may not own many or any guitars at all because, hey, you are a producer of guitars. So you tend to, at least once you start building a lot of guitars, you tend to stop being a consumer of guitars. And I'm that same way, too. I actually only own one guitar, and it's not even a steel string. It's a nylon-strung classical Taylor. I only own one commercially made guitar, and that's it. I've owned many in the past, but they have all left. They've all been sold or given away at this point. And now I have just many of my own guitars lying around, and I like to play those. So, yeah, I mean, honestly, I can't afford space-wise to have commercially made guitars because I would run out of space. I have too many guitars as it is. Larry Kuhn writes, Taylor, my favorite guitar that I own is the Taylor 714. I like that the company keeps trying to innovate. That is true. I like that too. Extra points for putting fret dots in the right places. I'm actually not sure what he's talking about, but I guess, some other companies don't put their fret dots in the right places. Since you mentioned smaller companies, this is Larry Kuhn again. Since you mentioned smaller companies, I'm not far from Ryan Guitars and have had a chance to stop in, talk with Kevin Ryan, see their shop, and play their instruments. And then he writes one word, wow. Okay, yeah, that's great. I've never met Kevin Ryan. He's a well-known luthier, and he does really awesome work. Does he have him? Just asking you, Larry Kuhn, does he have employees in his shop, or is it just him and maybe an apprentice? Just out of curiosity, I wonder what kind of operation he's got going there. So please let me know in the forum. Okay, so that's the question of the week. Let's go to your questions now. We're in the private forum, by the way. This is the Discord channel for members of my online guitar building school and also past students of my guitar build workshops. Those are the people who have access to this forum. Later on, I'm going to go through your YouTube comments as well and answer some of those, but we're going to start here. Okay. And this question comes from Larry Kuhn. Not really a question, a comment, actually. He writes, yesterday, I discovered a new joy unique to parlor builds, the combination of a small sound hole, big hands, and bolt-on necks. I can barely get the bolts through the holes with the tips of two fingers, and my skin is rubbed raw where it struggled against the sound hole. Fortunately, my wife's hands fit easily. She's going to get sick of me asking her for help. So here's what you need to do. Dip your hands in a jar of paste wax. No, I'm just kidding. Don't do that. I had this same issue with actually the guitar right behind me and the other guitar that I built in tandem with this one, the two parlors. And I talked about this in the series I did on parlor guitars, how much of a struggle it was getting my hands through the sound hole. And actually since then, I have adjusted my plans by just a hair. I mean, like half a millimeter of extra width on that sound hole, that tiny amount of change, making the sound hole larger by a tiny amount. Yeah, technically it changes the dimensions of the guitar, but it makes everything so much more possible, so much more doable. I'm not, you know, rubbing the skin off of my hands like he talked about there. So anyway, you could try that. Don't dip your hands in paste wax. I was kidding about that. But you could try changing the size of your sound hole. But either way, I don't think he was looking for a solution there. His wife's hands are smaller. That works too. He was just providing some interesting commentary. And he's right. Parlors are tricky in that sense. Okay. Let's see. Another question. Oh, here's a follow-up to a question that we talked about in the last Q&A. Tony was trying to find a fretting saw that would work for the problem that he was having. He was hammering in his frets and they just absolutely didn't fit, and he forced them in and basically ruined his fretboard and neck. And so now going forward, he's looking for a better match, and he was having trouble finding a fretting saw that was big enough for the fret wire that he wants to use. And Doc Joe writes, Tony, have you reached out to Crimson Guitars in Dorset? Because Tony's in the UK. I've gotten a fret saw from them, actually a fret slotting jig that came with a saw. They do sell saws by themselves. I think you may also want to take a triangular diamond file to the fret slots, and one or two light passes may open up those fret slots a little more and would definitely help seating the frets in initially. I hope that is helpful. Yeah, so that's not the main reason why you use a triangle needle file to kiss the top edges of the fret slots. It's really to prevent chip out, but that might actually help just a little bit. It's hard to say. That might open them up a little bit. The only reason I'm being cautious there with what Doc Joe said is I wouldn't want Tony to try and use that as the solution. Clearly, his slots aren't big enough and he needs the appropriate size saw or the appropriate sized fret wire with the appropriate size tang. Okay, you could look at it either way. You could either find a different saw for your fret wire or a different fret wire for your saw. But he sounds pretty, from what we discussed in the last Q&A, he sounds pretty set on the fret wire because he likes, sounds like he just likes the gold color of it. So he's stuck, you know, finding a bigger saw. Okay, but thank you for that. Who was that? Was that Rob or who? I got to read. Oh, Doc Joe. Sorry. Thank you, Doc Joe. And, okay, let's do another one. Oh, this is great. This is from LC Guitars. And actually, I'm going to, after I get off the podcast here, I'm going to make his comment here into the new question of the week for next week and post it so you guys can give us your responses, because I think this is a really great question. LC Guitars writes, branding and marketing. I finally paid to have a logo made for my shirts. I love the retro styling she came up with. What do you guys do for marketing and branding? Great question, like I said. Really, really great question. So as per usual with the question of the week, I'm not going to answer this right now because I don't want to taint the waters. I want to hear what you guys have to say. So I'm just going to put this out there. I'm going to, once I get off the podcast, like I said, I'll change it on the forum so you guys can see the question. What do you guys do for branding? okay? You know, whether it's merch or stuff you do with social media, just altogether, what is your branding strategy? Maybe you have no strategy, and that's fine too. Also, maybe you're retired and you're not trying to sell guitars. But hey, if you are, let's talk about branding and marketing. That's always fun to talk about. It's more fun, though, to talk about geeky technical stuff with guitars, so let's get back to that. The next question, actually, let's check out your shared progress here. Patrick writes, someone on a Facebook forum questioned whether a Go Bar deck had enough clamping pressure, so I measured mine. A little over 6 pounds per rod, more if you bend it more. There's a lot of pressure when you use a few dozen. Yeah, so that's a tough question to even ask or answer, because it's dependent on how much you're flexing the rod and even what the rod is made out of. I can see the type of rod that he's using there, which is kite rod stock. That's what that actually is. It comes from like kite companies. Luthier suppliers, I think, also sell these now too, but that's sort of the original source. It's the type of rods that they use to assemble kites. And I have a bunch of those, and I used to use them exclusively. I felt like I wasn't getting enough pressure from them also. And yeah, you can bend them more, but there's a point where bending them more just makes you uncomfortable. So you want something that's a little bit more stouter as a material. And I have found that the Stumac rods, the fiberglass rods that they sell, that look a little more, they look rectangular in cross-section. It's the only way I can think to describe them. They're yellow. Those are great. They're super strong at just a low bend. And I really like that. I still keep these kite rod Go Bars around simply because when I'm setting up certain things in order to just align them and place spacers to hold them in place before I actually glue them in place, it's nice to use something with a little bit lower pressure because it's easier to just get it on there and manipulate it and move it around under pressure if the pressure is light. So I still keep those kite rod Go Bars for that, and they're very useful for that. But when I actually glue it down, I like the Stumac ones, I must say. I do like those. And I wonder what those would come out to be on the scale. I would think at least double that 6 pounds. Wonder what... It's funny, I have a bunch of weights right here. Two of these stacked. These are 2.5 each. So that's about 6 pounds. That's 5 pounds. Yeah. That's pretty good pressure, especially because the Go Bars, they're so small, they have such a small footprint that you tend to use a lot of them fairly close together for a good distribution of pressure. And that, you know, 6 pounds at each point, I think, even that, I think, is more than enough pressure. Anyway, that's great. That's just, you know, interesting to think about. Thank you for posting that, Patrick. He also writes, inlays came today. Now I need to decide on the wood for the head plate. Ebony with the inlay? Question mark. Snakewood without inlay? Snakewood with inlay? I'd love to hear your opinions. He's got some great pictures here. And, well, let's see if I get the rest of the guitar in context here, because he has some earlier pictures. Here, I'll throw this one up. This is the guitar that it's going on with a spalted something. I don't think that's maple. He's got a spalted wood on the top. And you can't go wrong with ebony on anything, because it's just black. It definitely doesn't contrast in a bad way to use ebony. Just gut reaction, I would go with the ebony with the inlay, because those inlays look pretty cool. But the snakewood, I think, would also match fairly well. Yeah, and you aren't suggesting to put an inlay on the snake wood, and that's good because that's what I would recommend if you were going to go with the snake wood. It would be hard to put an inlay on a lighter colored wood like snake wood and have it come out looking right. Okay. Very cool. Let's see, anything else I want to do before we jump over to YouTube? Okay, LC Guitars writes, I sold a bass at the Indiana Guitar Show and got a clip of the new owner testing it. That is awesome, man. Congratulations. LC Guitars has really been killing it as far as selling his guitars. He's like really killing it, honestly. I just went to a show with him not too long ago, the Altoona, well, it's called the Best Guitar Show, but it's in Altoona, Pennsylvania. I had a great time. He sold two guitars at the show. Which, if you've never been to a guitar show as a vendor, that's awesome. Selling two guitars, you're killing it. That's great. I sold zero. So he sold two guitars at the at that show, one guitar at this Indiana show. That's what it's all about. You know, in case you're wondering, this is just a common trope, I guess, in the vendor world of boutique luthiers. You shouldn't expect to go to a guitar show and sell a guitar. It's actually a little bit more about the long tail of sales, meaning you're just making connections at the show and essentially giving people information, and they're going to follow up with you later, and hopefully you sell something later on down the line. But to actually sell a guitar at the show and somebody walks out with one of your guitars, that's awesome. That's always just icing on the cake. I mean, that just makes you super happy when it happens. But you shouldn't expect it. Although LC Guitars, man, you're doing it. You're doing it. Keep it up. Patrick asks LC, "What's the fingerboard wood? I really like the orange colors in it." And he writes, "It's East Indian rosewood." Okay, I was actually going to say Macassar ebony. But yeah, if we zoom in on that, yep, that's East Indian rosewood. He writes, I bought the last six that LMI had left for bases. That's great. Good for you, man. Okay. Oh, and he's got a video of the new owner of this guitar playing, or I'm sorry, this bass playing it. So I'll just briefly throw up maybe just a couple seconds of this. Player too. That's great. That is awesome. Okay. Let's jump over to YouTube and check out your comments there. All right, and we are on YouTube now. ArcRed1 writes, putting that added work into attaching the binding slash purfling is the difference between a luthier and the lazy builder, as he calls it. And you know, I kind of can't disagree. The binding and purfling work is so significant, just as far as the total amount of time on a guitar. If I didn't have to do binding and purfling, I mean, I would just be churning out guitars pretty easily. It takes a lot of time. A lot of thought goes into it. It's, you know, very much an aesthetic thing. I mean, it has a function. It protects the edges from dings and it seals the grain all around the softwood of the top. But if that was the only thing that we cared about it doing, we would just slap some plastic on there real quick. As boutique builders, we tend to doll the guitar up a little bit when it comes to the binding and purfling. Yeah, I don't know if I would say the lazy builder because you could just put your effort into different aspects of the guitar that aren't the binding and purfling and not be lazy about it. But I get the spirit of what he's saying. I mean, the getting those miters just right and doing all of that. I think a lot of people going into it don't realize just how much time, how much of a time sink it is to get all that just so. It is why sometimes I will build guitars that just have binding with no purfling, even on the top, let alone on the sides and everywhere else, just so I can, especially with smaller, like my parlor guitars and stuff, sometimes I'll do those a little bit more simple, because I think on a small body like that, maybe, you know, the player doesn't care as much about the binding. So I don't know. That's a great point. It's always up to the player, really, and what your market is and who you're trying to market your guitars to. Anyway, let's move on from that. Jonah Guitar Guy writes, I think you may have mentioned Jim Lill in a previous video. No, I definitely haven't, because I don't know who that is, actually. But if you didn't, he made a video that completely busts the tone wood on electric guitars, or any wood for that matter, myth. He eliminates the wood from what would be a Tele setup and hangs strings from a sawhorse to a workbench with in between. And guess what? It sounds like a Telecaster. I think the tone ideas carried over from acoustic guitars that came before. There's a saying about hearing with our eyes. We humans tend to receive the result we were hoping for, especially if there was a lot of money involved. Yep. Yeah, I agree with all of that. You know, he's commenting on basically the electric guitar tone wood myth, which always gets me in a lot of trouble when I bring it up. But, you know, it's not to say that tone wood isn't a thing. It doesn't matter. It does with acoustic guitars. It's just not a significant or discernible thing in electric guitars. And, you know what, I'm not even going to get into it here, but that's, I know who he's talking about, actually, now that he mentions it. I didn't know his name was Jim Lill, but I have seen this video, and it is pretty cool. So thank you for that, Jonah Guitar Guy. Pete C. writes, hey, Eric, yes, his jig. He's talking about a neck profiling jig that I talked about in the last video, and he's correcting me here because I did actually speak out of turn there, and I was wrong. He writes, hey, Eric, yes, his neck profiling jig can accommodate different profiles and is accomplished by creating a template that attaches to one end of the jig. That is why the springs are very important. As the neck gets rotated, the spring keeps the neck in contact with the template as it slides up and down in the slots. I hope this quick explanation makes sense. It's all explained in the video if you care to watch. Yeah, and I did actually watch the video, but maybe I didn't see the whole thing, honestly. Sometimes I skip parts, but I just don't quite remember that. And so I spoke incorrectly there when I said that you couldn't do in a neck profiling jig like that, where you have a fixture that holds the neck in basically an acrylic box that you run a router over the top to route out your neck contour very quickly. I said that you could only do a simple C shape in that fashion, and you wouldn't be able to do more complicated shapes or a U or a V-neck or something like that. But I was wrong, and I get what he's saying. You absolutely can. There's a form that goes in there that guides your router work. Hey, Eric. It's time for you to make a 12-string acoustic, in my opinion. Well, actually, you know, stay tuned for this. There may be a 12-string coming down the line, meaning I'll be getting started with it, not that it's going to be finished. I may be starting a 12-string very soon. So we'll see. We'll see. I'm very interested in them, though. Scar60 writes, I agree with you, Eric, 1,000% regarding electric guitars and tone wood. That guy with the LP Strat and Music Man, all great guitars, but a Strat is a through body LP, stop tailpiece, different sound. Scale length, I have built from scratch over 20 electric guitars. I am no expert, however, Also, he can't write. I'm going to blame him and myself because there's all kinds of periods in the wrong place and grammatical errors here. I'm confused by how he wrote this. But I'll go on anyway. I have built from scratch over 20 electric guitars. I am no expert. However, the only difference in the wood is the finished weight of the guitar and the looks, but not tone. Okay, yeah. Yeah, so just, again, picking up from these previous conversations that we have through this channel and through the many Q&As that I do and through these videos, just to kind of bring you guys up to full speed, we were talking about, I was talking about scale, how scale length is very important in electric guitars in determining the tone. And often when people are ascribing values, you know, audible values to guitars, they're ascribing that to the wood, right? When they should, when sometimes it's very obviously other things like the scale length. You know what I mean? Like, you can't say that a Strat and a Les Paul sound different because of the wood when they're dramatically different scale lengths. Among other things, among other sort of dimensional properties of the overall, you know, the dimensions of the guitar rather than the material selection. And so he's saying he's built over 20 electric guitars. He's saying the finished weight, which is, he's right, and I agree with him on this, absolutely. The one way that wood impacts the playability and, to a small extent, the tone is the finished weight. And you'll get a different finished weight from different woods. But, so that's great. I always try to move through those questions quickly because, sometimes they hurt my head, and also they make people angry. So we'll move on from that. Rod Parker writes, "Nice, clean work, sir. What notes are you looking for when tapping the top?" So I'm not really looking for notes, you know, C sharp or anything like that. First of all, when I'm tapping, so I do a lot of flexing. He's talking about a video I did previously. Mostly what I'm doing when I'm voicing is flexing, but I do a little bit of tapping at the end and some tapping throughout. But essentially what I'm looking for when I'm tapping is, first of all, a clear bell-like tone. And I know that's not a quantitative thing, so it's hard to put your hands on that and grasp what I'm talking about if you don't already know what to listen for. But essentially, a clear bell-like tone with good sustain. So when you tap that note, you should be able to, in your head, count one Mississippi, two Mississippi, three, or something like that. Like, you should be able to hear a long note and not a quick percussive sound like that. And that's a part of what I mean by that clear bell-like tone, is just that sustain rather than a dull thud. So it should sustain. I'm not listening for any specific note, but then also, and this is, you know, in that video, if it's the video I'm thinking of, I think it might be. In that video, also what I'm doing at the end is I want to hear not just one note. I want to hear at least three different, distinctly different notes. Now, that's the only important part there. It's not that I'm listening for a particular note on the, you know, musical scale. I am just looking to hear different notes, okay? So if I tap in a couple different places while holding it at a particular node on the guitar, so I'm holding it in one place, the hand that holds it isn't moving around. If I keep that in one place and I tap like this, I should at least hear three different distinct notes. It should sound musical, which I know is very subjective. When I tap, I can't hear, I don't know that many people can, I can't hear what each individual note is, or even what the interval is between those notes, because it's such a quick percussive sound, my ear just isn't that good. But I can tap it, and sort of if I adopt like a childlike mind, I can tell if those three notes are musical and fun to tap. Essentially, if you handed me three different soundboards at the same time and I tapped them all, even a small child would be able to, if you told, ask that child, okay, which one do you want to play and keep, like a drum, if you're just tapping it, the little kid would be able to say, oh, this one's more fun. And I know that's a weird way to explain it, but what I'm trying to get at is that there's a certain interval between those notes that sort of we all, as humans, all kind of identify as pleasant and enjoyable to listen to. And that's probably something like a 1, a 4, and a 5, if we're talking in intervals, musical intervals. That's why so much of popular music is made out of 1, 4, 5, okay? Just those, that chord progression. So it's not that I need, you know, to break out a tuner and actually get very precise frequencies at each of those locations when I tap to get 1, 4, 5. It's more approximate than that. So when I tap, rather than hearing like either just the same note everywhere or like 1, 2, 7, which is not very musical. There's not a lot of music that you can create out of the intervals 1, 4, 1, 2, and 7 without sounding very progressive and jazzy, essentially. But you know, and within popular music, it's 1, 4, 5. So anyway, weird explanation, I know, and I'm not doing the best job at explaining it right now. I've done better in the past if you watch some videos I've done on this topic, but it's always difficult for me and it's constantly evolving. But anyway, that's just one way that I think about it. Okay, so no specific pitches to answer your question more briefly. Let's see what else we got. Very, very good question. Very complex question. It trips me up sometimes talking about it. DALG Guitarist writes, there are neck carving jigs like this one where you can make different pucks that will change the shape of the carve. So this is, again, what I was talking about before. He says, I've seen them on YouTube, but it's been a few years. These seem primarily for electric guitar necks. Also, it's a production device for making lots and lots of guitar necks. For me, the neck carving process is one of the most fun things, so I would never put it into production. Okay. Yeah, great. So again, I got that wrong. I didn't realize that there were pucks, as he called them, that could give you different neck shapes for using a neck profiling jig. Very good. David Harris writes, a Mr. Fletcher from Australia makes a Finnish sanding jig for neck joints. Extremely accurate. Okay, I'm just going to skip that one because I don't quite know what he's talking about, honestly. Victor Louise writes, wow, this is truly a masterclass. I will definitely use many of the tips and tricks you have shown here and shared here. Always living and learning. Thank you very much. Yes, so I'm actually including this question here simply because I put out this, what I thought was a really great video on refretting on a bound fretboard. And I was totally expecting the numbers, the YouTube numbers, to really go up here for this specific video, and it was a total dud, just a complete failure of a video in any sort of YouTube metrics terms. So anyway, it still is a really great video, and it's still out there, and so I'm just sharing his comment here, so maybe some of you guys watch this. Maybe it didn't do so hot because it's over an hour long. It's a very long video, but it is a masterclass. I feel like using the term masterclass is kind of a douchey term, but whatever. I like to use it. I specifically use it for videos that are over 45 minutes. I don't plan this ahead of time when I make the video, like, oh, this one's going to be a masterclass. It's just when it's over 45 minutes, and as I'm editing it, there are some where I realize that, wow, this is also very dense, and it's very comprehensive. Dense with information, okay? Then I call it a masterclass. So I only have a couple videos out there that I've thrown that term onto there, And just so you know, it's not simply to like get you guys to click on it and then it's just bullshit on the inside. It really is, like I said, it's when it's these very long and comprehensive and dense with information videos, I feel like that's when I get to tag it as a masterclass. So anyway, he's agreeing that it was a masterclass. So watch it. Come on, guys. Please. Help me out here. Oh, this is good. John J. Long writes, YMMV equals your mileage may vary. So I had asked in the previous video, sometimes there's so many of these abbreviations for things out there. And as a now 36-year-old dad, I'm falling behind, and I feel like half the time I'm reading your comments and these little, like, BRB, be right back, you know, these little LOL, laugh out loud, these little abbreviations for things, they keep evolving and changing, and new ones are coming out all the time. I can't keep up, and so sometimes I'll see one, and I don't know what that is. So anyway, he's helping me out here. Maybe John J. Long is Gen Z. He's a Zoomer, and he knows what's going on. Or he's an older guy who just keeps up a little better than me. Your mileage may vary is YMMV. Thank you. Oh, and he also answers another question I had in that same video. A leg tapering jig is used in general woodworking. You can build or buy them. They're mostly for making tapers on the length of a table leg or a chair leg. Okay, that's great. Someone had mentioned those in a previous video, and I didn't know what a leg tapering jig was because I don't really do general woodworking all that much. I'm very much in the world of luthery, and it's a similar world in general woodworking, but a little bit different, and some things I miss. So thanks. Oh, and also, again, man, I really messed up on that last video because he's also telling me, John Long is telling me, look up the Temple Guitars video, Carving a Guitar Neck Radius in Under 4 Minutes, where he explains how to get different profiles. So yeah, you can definitely get different profiles with a neck carving jig. I am sorry that I got that wrong. Larry Kuhn writes, and I completely understand that my headstock question was an aesthetic one and not a functional one, but this is the third time you've told me I was overthinking something. That's great. So sometimes it sounds like he overthinks things maybe a little bit too much, which is not necessarily a bad thing. It's far worse to underthink things. Questions? Okay, Larry Kuhn also writes, I had mentioned that the question of the week was failing on my part to be a question of the week because I wasn't actually posting it every week. And instead, I was starting to call it the questions that I intermittently post, which he mentions the abbreviation instead of QOTW, which is what we've been using for question of the week, is Q-tip, which is kind of cool. I kind of like that. So maybe instead of the question of the week, the QOTW, we'll start calling it the Q-tip, which is the questions that I intermittently post. That's great. Thank you, Eric. Sorry, I did not watch the refret on the electric guitar. Yes, go watch that refret video, Walter Ryder. Everybody, it's a damn good video. Come on, guys. Okay, Scott Borchard likes Taylor. He says, it's the neck. He likes Taylor guitars for the neck. And in response to that question about which guitar brand you like the most. So he's a Taylor guy. Joni Guitar also responding to that question. In answer to the intermittent random question of whenever, that's another great thing to call it. I like Fender a lot, but I would also use Ibanez. Those neck profile jigs have a call at each end for the pattern, so different calls provide different profiles. Once again, thank you. Another person correcting me on that. Man, really got that one wrong. Okay. Your mileage may vary. Yep, we already answered that. Fat Matt Tones writes, I tremendously value someone who uses logic, reason, and critical thinking in conjunction with facts and data to validate an argument. Well done. Thank you. So that's on the electric guitar Tonewood stuff again. Also on that topic, Teensier Python writes, there is nothing wrong with buying a guitar for fancy wood. I buy firearms for pretty wood all the time. The issue I have with tone wood is that most of these guitars are composite wood. They are chunks glued together. It's plywood. Yes, that is also true. And, you know, the first thing you said, I completely agree with that. There's no, I am kind of a wood freak. Like, I love things, not just wood, actually. I love non-bullshit materials. Non-modern materials, and this goes beyond guitars too. Like he mentioned, firearms. I have a shotgun, but I'm not like a big firearm guy, so that's not my world. But if I was, I would probably want a good stock made out of a solid wood. There's just something. It's aesthetic. It's romantic as well. There's certain vibe, to use a millennial term, really, that you get from real wood and not composite materials. And so, honestly, I'm not knocking people for buying electric guitars that are fully made out of solid wood for no reason other than just an appreciation of the medium. That's totally fine. I would do the same thing. But it's not contribute. It's good to know what's what, like what's really going on, and not be fooled by snake oil. It's not meaningfully contributing to the tone. Okay, in an electric guitar, we're talking about electric guitars. The situation is definitely a little bit different with acoustics. We don't need to relitigate that whole thing right now. Done it enough. Lewis Griffin writes, nice work, Eric. I like the tip using the soldering iron to heat and remove the old fret. So he's talking about that refret video. Go watch it. I sent my tailor in for a expression system refurb and refret, and they broke the binding in several spots and claimed that always happens. Wow. Yeah, that don't go back to them. When I complained if they took a bit more care like you do, I'll bet that would minimize the damage to the binding. Oh, I'm sorry, I read that funny. They broke the binding in several spots and claimed that always happens when I complained if they took a bit more care like you do. I'll bet that would minimize the damage. Okay. Yeah. That's definitely just the sign of honestly someone who doesn't know what they're doing, and you should not trust your guitars with them. If they say that always happens, that definitely does not always happen. That was them not knowing what they were doing. All right, Scar60 writes, they have not stopped making Johnson's paste wax. It used to be made in the USA. Unfortunately, like most things, it is made overseas. After the plague, as he calls it, the whole supply chain is disrupted, which causes huge increases in costs to both the consumer and manufacturers. Sorry for the rant. There's no rant there. That was actually very succinct. And trust me, I could rant on that, but I won't. That's not what I do here. I'll be a good boy. It's definitely related to the supply chain issues from the thing that happened in 2020, we'll just call it, which was entirely predictable that we would have basically an everything shortage afterwards, which we continue to have. It's kind of a game of whack-a-mole where we don't know what we're going to run into, what's going to be in short supply next, and what we're going to have to pay, you know, 12 times the price for. And in this case, it's Johnson's paste wax. So this was on a video where I showed you guys kind of bragging a little bit that I had not one, actually, but two cans of Johnson's paste wax. They happened to just so happened to buy right before all this happened, and the little price tag is still on it for $6 and, I don't know, 48 cents or something. And right now, if you look up Johnson's Paste Wax, I don't know if it's come down a little bit, but the highest that I saw it at one point was like $280 for a single tub of Johnson's Paste Wax. Now, lucky for me, the way that I use it, just dipping a Q-tip in there and rubbing a little bit on the whatever I'm using it for. I use it for a couple different things. But I don't use gobs of it like, say, someone working in the hardwood flooring industry would. I'm just using a little Q-tip's worth at a time. So those two jars, I mean, it's going to last me like decades, honestly. I think. Probably. Yeah, probably decades. So I think I'm set. I think I can ride out the Johnson's Paste Wax storm. Anyway, I'm going to end it right there. Thanks for watching. You guys are the best. I always have fun doing this. I really do. Keep the questions coming. A couple things I talked about in this video. Go check out that refrat video, please, because it was good. And it's not even, honestly, it's not about like bringing the views up. I'm not a big like YouTube views guy. I don't normally even talk about that kind of stuff. But the metric is useful just to tell me like, hey, I made this thing and nobody watched it. And I don't know. I just really thought I put some good work into that one. So I want you guys to see it. That's what it really is. Go check out that video. I'll be at the Mount Gretna Art Show in August 17th, 18th. Come check me out there. And keep on building guitars, guys. And that's all. I'm going to say goodbye now because I'm rambling. Bye for now. If you learned something here, please give this video a like and subscribe so you can be notified when I release a new DIY guitar making video. And if you want to really learn more, take one of my structured online courses at ericschaferguitars.com or register for a hands-on guitar building workshop here with me in Burnville, Pennsylvania.